When you get up in the morning, think about how precious life is. To breathe, to think, to enjoy, to love. Marcus Aurelius. Episode of Podnuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B, coming at you live from Fort Lauderdale on a balmy night in April, where the weather is currently 80 degrees with a real feel of 84. And that's pretty good for this time of year. I am joined tonight by a friend you last heard from on this show back in 2019. Eric Pinto from Sock Solder. Eric, how are you?
Hey, buddy. How are you, man? I'm good.
All right. We're doing good. So, Eric, it has been a while. Now, we've chatted, obviously, in between, but I haven't been able to get you on the show. We talked about getting you on after that ASCII event in 2019. I blame some of that on COVID. So, let me just go ahead and ask you, how have things been? And how have you been keeping yourself busy?
I've been well. Well, it's been a weird year, I think, for everybody, right? But I've been well. I was reflecting back to that interview. I guess that was almost 2 years ago. 2 years ago, to almost to the month, right? Yeah. April or so of, or May or so of 2019. It's been a great ride since then with Sock Solder and. Working through the cybersecurity world, and it's awesome. Everything's good.
All right. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you are listening or watching Podnuts Pro. This is your podcast for business IT support, where hopefully we help you run your business better, smarter, and faster. We are here just about every Wednesday at this time, 8 p.m. For those of you listening to the audio, we stream live on YouTube and the Facebook, so you can watch us and see our faces as we talk about stuff. For those of you watching, well, you can see us, but you can also subscribe or follow on any of the pages, Facebook, YouTube. You can also go to the website, podnutspro.com, and you can go back and listen to any of the past episodes. Videos are included with those. Those videos will include the post show, which we actually will be having tonight. So those of you listening just to the audio portion, you may want to head over and catch the video because something good may happen after the closing credits.
Is that where it gets good, Marvin?
It's a Podnuts After Dark. It's what it gets. So I want to go ahead and first give a few shout outs and say thank you. So I have been busy the last couple of months. I haven't had time. All right. Let me just say I haven't made the time to thank some people. I want to be able and thank some people that have helped me out. I was in Tampa last month doing an installation, a phone installation, and then I also upgraded a bunch of Windows machines. We still had a client with Windows 7 that we finally got them to upgrade to Windows 10. So I had about 8 systems that I had to upgrade on a Saturday. And first, I need to thank my subcontractor on the west coast of Florida, Troy, who works for True Tech computers over there. He's the guy that I call whenever I need help, boots on the ground in the Tampa area. He takes care of clients over there. But I also have to thank another friend of mine, an ASCII member, Carrie Showalter with ShowTech. One of the things that we had an issue with while I was installing those computers is we did not give them new monitors. So they had old VGA-style monitors, and the computers that we gave them had DisplayPort adapters. Now, I thought I brought enough, but I didn't. and we could not find any at a local store, Best Buy, Office Depot, and there seemed to be no local computer stores that were open. So I put out a big plea, and Carrie from ShowTech said, yeah, we may have some. And he actually had several there and sold me 8 cables. I didn't get them free or discounted. So either way, I still want to say thank you, because that saved us without, you know, making us have to come back on a Monday to do that. So we were able to get all the computers up, and the people were able to work on Monday without incident. So I want to take time to say thank you to those people. And I had some other thank yous, but I want to go ahead and let everybody know we are not going to be doing the normal Florida Man story or tech story. For those of you that are regular listeners, you notice that the quote at the beginning of the show was a little bit different. And I just want to say that the reason it's different is because we had a little incident here in my neighborhood. We had one of our neighbors commit suicide this morning. So we spent the day dealing with that. He wasn't one of the real close neighbors, but he was a neighbor that literally was across the street from us, one house over. Somebody that I saw just about every day, somebody I knew. And not much I can really say. It wasn't somebody that was having any issues, no money problems, no nothing that anybody around in the neighborhood, we all know each other. It's one of the weirdest things. I live in a neighborhood where we're all friendly and we all talk. Everybody walks their dogs and runs and rides their bikes. And, you know, today was spent wondering what happened. So, you know, we talk about life being short, and, you know, we always at this time try to say, you know, we don't take small things for granted. Every moment is important. You know, don't spend your time being frustrated or angry. You know, take a moment to breathe, to be grateful, all those things. So rather than pull out a Florida Man story tonight, I just wanted to take a moment and let people know that that's what's going on in my life. And I think everybody else should know life is precious. So take time and reach out to loved ones, friends, family, and your neighbors. Something you say might help them in that time. So no good way to transition from that, but we're going to try to. So Eric?
Well, I'll say first, sorry for your loss out there. That's, that's never anything easy to deal with, and having it right across the street. Community is incredibly important. I think we've spent the last year really finding out how important it is, right? Yep. The community of people that we're around, you know, the community of people that we work with. And the second thing I'll say is, you know, your tech story, that you said earlier, you know, how, you know, a partner or another service provider in the area, another tech person in the area came, you know, to your aid so that you didn't have to come back on Monday, and you were able to accomplish the job on Saturday or Sunday. That's really indicative of this tech community, right? I mean, I think that this tech community, good and bad, sometimes even competitors, will still band together. And that's something that I've come to love in the time that I've been in the channel community.
Well said. And that is something that, you know, this show, it's weird. You know, Podnuts Pro is not one of those popular podcasts. You know, I don't have a million views, but
not yet. Not yet, Bobby. Come on. We can get there. We can get there together.
We can work on it. But we do have a sense of community. The listeners that listen and watch every week, the people that I have grown to know because of the podcast, because of ASCII, because of CompTIA and being in the channel, you know, we all come together when we need to, you know, mm-hmm. whether it's helping each other out, you know, throwing a problem up on, you know, Facebook or Reddit or something, and figuring out if somebody else is running into a problem that, you know,
that's right,
we can't answer. The fact that people, you know, will reach out and help and answer and sometimes give free advice, it's great. So that's one reason to keep on keeping on. Now let's talk about this, because so you've been in the channel now, what is it, like 8-9 years in where you're at now, but you started as an MSP as well, right?
Started out as a solution provider, service provider, kind of an MSSP before that title was even big. Mm-hmm. We were selling a suite of security services to end customers and to fellow service providers, and we would sell and support it. Really security focused in that time. That was how I transitioned into the channel to begin with, right? So we had our own group and our own sort of customer base, and just like all good things in this world, mergers and acquisitions happened, and our business was funneled into a larger business that we grew from there, or I grew from there in the channel.
All right, that was nice. Now, did you start out in security, or did you just kind of end up there?
Yeah, well, I started out just early days, you know, post college. Just started out just doing interconnects, so DSL, fiber, you know, all, you know, those sorts of lines. And within a few years, though, a buddy of mine had told me about some things were happening in the security world, and it was really interesting to me. And you know, I came on board and started working with them, and that's the company that we ended up growing out for several years after that. So security came in early for me, and it's really been my passion. It's been the cornerstone of sort of who I am in business, and it's worked out well for us.
Okay. Now, for the listeners and viewers who don't know SOC Solder, mm-hmm. we didn't have a lot of time to flesh that out even 2 years ago. So we've got a little more time this go around. So why don't you explain SOC Solder and tell people, you know, what it means for us?
Yeah. So SOC Solder, first, the name is sort of odd, right? So SOC is Security Operations Center. I think everyone sort of gets that when they see it spelled out. The SOTER part, the SOTER, they're derivative of Greek for protector, right? So, and it is really sort of at the heart of what we do, protect computer networks and business networks. We work exclusively in the channel space, so VARs, integrators, service providers, and the like. We provide a suite of security solutions along with a ton of compliance expertise and assistance, really to meet the demands as we see it in small business or mid-sized business. The sub 250 employee space is sort of where we live. And increasingly lately, you know, the 50 to 100 or even 25 to 50 space in small businesses is being tasked to secure down. And we've got a suite of solutions to help them out.
All right. So when you talk about, you know, compliance and stuff, so are you aligning with all of the compliances, you know, NIST, HIPAA, FINRA, all of that?
Yeah, there's so many, right? And I mean, we could just rattle off three and four letter things, acronyms, you know, all day long. And some of us will follow along, and other ones would just be singing the alphabet soup. But either way, they all, in one way or another, they all sort of boil down to the same core objectives. And it's really, you have to look at the objectives and say, you know, a lot of people look at compliance and say, oh, gosh, why do I have to do all of this stuff? And I think asking that question is really important, because you want to get into the why. What, you know, why am I being asked to monitor my network? Why am I being asked to have a system security plan or to have incident response capabilities? And those are those core areas that we see amongst HIPAA, along with NIST 800-171, CMMC, you know, GDPR, all of the other ones, right?
Right.
They're wanting more awareness over the network, wherever that might be, and especially in today's world. And then the ability to react very quickly with information, right? So if something happens, being able to respond quickly is a big demand too.
So you mentioned something that I'm going to take a little bit of a left turn here. Because I just had a conversation with a client who they're not on a contract. They wanted to stay break fix. They're just like, we just want to call you when we need you. And they called me a couple of weeks ago and said that we're trying to get our cyber security insurance renewed. But we have all these questions that we need to fill out and we don't have answers for. So I just spent yesterday and today reviewing that with them. And it was interesting having that conversation because they were like, why do we have to do all this? This is just so inconvenient. And so I said, well, how important is your house to you and all of the valuables that you have in your house? Do you lock your door when you leave? Do you have an alarm? Is that convenient or inconvenient? Well, I'm doing it to protect myself. That's important. I'm like, well, your work, your computers, your network is just as important.
That's right.
And it's, from my perspective, it's almost like trying to get people to understand that this isn't being done to hinder them from work. This is being done to protect them. And I think the difference is they don't like the inconvenience and they don't like the cost. So
that's true.
So I guess I can ask you, you know, for the most part, you're dealing with a lot of companies like me who we're probably the ones saying when you try to approach us and say, well, we've got a solution for you. And we're, oh man, how much is it?
You know? I think that's natural, right? I think that, you know, I say this sort of all the time, you know, I don't like to spend money on anything really. Like if you come up and say, Hey Eric, do you want to spend $20 on anything? My answer is probably no, I probably don't. Right. Until you give me appropriate reasons why, like, do you want to spend $20 on dinner? Well, yeah, maybe. Where are we going? Right.
That's right. You know,
but my answer was yes, because I understood that yes, I need to eat. Yes. I'm, you know, yes, I want to go out and have fun together. Sure. The $20 now seems like a reasonable number. I think that translating that is challenging for technologists, right? We inherently understand that there's, you know, a huge amount of risk out there. We understand that the bad guys don't care if you're a small healthcare shop or a large healthcare shop or a small financial services group or a large one. They don't care because the tactics that they're going to use, whether it's one breach and they get 10,000 records or 10,000 records that produce or 10,000 breaches that produce one each, doesn't matter. It's just math. They want the data,
right?
Right. So if I get it from 10,000 places or one place, it doesn't matter. I just want the volume.
And they can do it with the same amount of work and a lot of.
It's the same amount of effort, right? It's click, boom, and you know, off to the races. We'll see. You know, you're casting a wide net. You're going to see what comes in. Right. And again, could be one big fish, could be 100 small fish. Irrelevant, right? I'm still going to eat tonight, right? That's what. That translating that message, Joe, and helping businesses to understand, and then I like the fact that you said, do you lock your doors? Do you have an alarm system? Right? I mean, I pay $20-$30 a month for my own house to have a camera system that's gonna likely tell me nothing every month. Every month it's gonna show the neighbor walking the dog. It's gonna show the kids playing ball. It's gonna show somebody, you know, cutting across my yard, something like that. But that's about it, hopefully, right?
Right.
I'm hoping that I don't need to see anybody out front, you know, trying to get in the car. I don't need to see anybody at the back gate. But I have all of those things monitored every day, 24 hours a day, and I sleep much more comfortably knowing that my stuff and my family have some, you know, sense of safety, right? And if something were to happen, I could look at the tape. I could try to figure out who got in there. What did they see? Did they get in my backyard? Were they in my front yard? I could see all of that if it were to happen, right? I pay $20 to $30 for that myself. I'll talk to a business about it, and the business will have 30, 40 employees, and numbers like $500 to $1,000 are seemingly too much, right? Actually, it's typically when I'm talking to them, we can lay out some of the reasons why and they get it. But I think before that, if they're just thinking about it and they see something that says, well, this is going to cost me $750 a month, it's immediately, well, no, we're not going to do that. but if we have the conversation and we dig into some of the reasons why, you know, why it's important to them, why it's not even about their data, but maybe about the data that they've got. Maybe it's not their data, but it's the fact that they're a law firm, that they're an insurance group, that they're in medical, and they've got thousands of records of people that they're doing business with, thousands of records from the court cases and the other, you know, the divorces and whatever else that lawyer has been working on, right? That stuff being exposed, the risk is not only the exposing the data, but then the business risk, right? The reputation risk. Because now Marvin B. Esquire, the lawyer, he's in South Florida past Miami. But he's gotta worry about, you know, all of the data that gets out. But then he's gonna call all of his top clients and say, hey, John, hey, Matt, hey, Mary, sorry. Remember that divorce case we did last month? Remember that business litigation we did last month? That stuff's out there now, dark web. And it gets interesting really quickly, right? So I think businesses are not necessarily not wanting to pay. I think they don't necessarily are not wanting to do the right things or not wanting to have advanced tools. It's just that they really don't understand the reason why it's important to them.
Right.
They're disconnected from that.
Of course. And if nothing has ever happened in the past,
right,
then why do I need to do this? But it takes, you know, something like a risk assessment or, you know, the next door office or the next door neighbor having something happen to them. And it was funny because when I was talking to this client, you know, some of the questions that were asked by that insurance company was, well, how many records do you have? And of course, I don't know.
Right.
So like, Marvin, can you find out for us? I said, yeah. So, you know, it's a weird thing because if it were a medical office or a law firm, you know, I'd find thousands of files and, you know, millions of dollars. And this is a engineering firm. And we found, what did we find? 74 records and their potential liability of $9,246. Not bad.
No, low.
They couldn't get insurance until they could provide that information.
Well, yeah. And you know what's interesting about that? And I'm all for insurance of all sorts. I think you need to have things in place, right? There was a big boom in 2018, 2019 in the cyber world of, hey, just go grab the insurance. Hey, just get this, you know, what you need to do first before you even address your problems, before even you assess, set up the cyber insurance. That was a big sort of push, 2018, 2019. And what we've seen this year, and end of last year, is a lot more questions when you go to get that insurance.
Right.
And there's a lot more scrutiny on the policy. And there's actually a lot more in the fine print about what you should have had in place to, you know, what's, you know, an acceptable, you know, sort of amount of security. In the fine print, you'll find that there's a lot of expectation. A lot of expectation of knowing where those files are, what's sensitive and what's not, doing vulnerability checking, all these sorts of things that when I read these policies, I basically just see like, oh, well, yeah, advanced cybersecurity. They're all these things one way or another. And I think that businesses sort of just calling Marvin in, now this is Marvin the MSP, calling Marvin in to take a look at the policy and green light it, you know, I think there's risk on both sides. There's risk on the business's side for saying yes and just trying to get it done as quickly as possible. And there's risk on your side, you know, even if you co-sign it and say, yeah, you're good, because is it good or not?
Right. Now you got to back that up.
Right. So with yours, you were going through it. Due diligence is only 70 something records. Obviously, you know, they're not healthcare. They're not financial. They're not dealing with financial data. You know, they probably have less of that exposure risk, but that exposure risk is the one that takes companies down. Because when they have to, and I'm not about trading in fear. And I think that that's an ineffective way to even approach businesses. But there are some realities, right? So, you know, if you've got 2,000 records, if you got 10,000 records, and they get exposed, you then you have some responsibility to go out and talk about it and tell everybody and go back to those, you know, top five clients and let them know. And, you know, you may then be looking at it and saying, wow, man, this cost us $20,000 or $30,000, you know, dollars to resolve. And let's say it was ransomware and the ransom was low, like 10 grand, you know, maybe you get the insurance to pay you the 10, but will they pay you the other 20 or 30 for, you know, for your time lost, for your reputation hit, for all of those things? Because you're going to get, you have to hire a social media manager to go out. You have marketing people involved. Now you have to rehab your image. There's so much involved, you know, in the insurances would look at that and say, yeah, we'll cover this part.
Right.
Good luck with the rest.
Yeah.
Mr. B.
Yep. And if you didn't have backup and you got to rebuild all that data,
mm-hmm.
Have fun.
That's exactly right. That's a whole nother area. Not my lane, but the backup area, the same thing, right? Yep.
Oh yeah.
You know, skimping in these areas doesn't make sense. The good news, though, I don't want to be all doom and gloom here, Marvin. The good news really is that all this stuff is achievable now. It's not necessarily crazy expensive to, you know, to ramp up in these areas in the same way that, you know, setting up the home camera monitoring systems and all that stuff has come way down in price, right? From where it was 10 years ago and beyond, right? So, you know, you can go out and either self-service and build something and, you know, try to effectively monitor your own systems, or, you know, hire a company, but in hiring a company, it's now, you know, half or a third or, you know, or less of what it was back in the day. So,
all right, well,
same, the same applies with the business.
Okay.
Stuff.
So we know costs have come down. The goals mm-hmm. are obtainable, but if we were to kind of put together a blueprint of, mm-hmm. What is the minimum amount of monitoring that should be done? Mm-hmm. How do you describe that to, you know, even to MSPs, yeah. what do we need to be doing?
Sure. Something I say sort of every day when I'm talking to our partners and prospects is really working to best understand your clients and your client model, right? So I think step one is, you know, when I have talks, you know, broadly, like, you know, either, you know, big webinar, stuff like that, when I have these talks, a lot of the times, you know, I'll keep saying things like HIPAA and requirements and regulation, or I'll say things like compliance and regulations and requirements there. And then the sort of natural thought, and what I get back most from the partner community is, oh, well, I don't have any medical clients. And I want to ask everyone to sort of zoom out and say, and look and say, well, you're saying medical because of medical records. Right. That makes sense. Total makes sense. But then let's apply that to different industries. Again, we talked about lawyers, insurance, banking, financial services. All those are personal records as well, or corporate records as well. And they have the exact same sort of risk profile in terms of interest, you know, interest from the bad guys. So you first need to look at the businesses that you're supporting and understand what it is that they're doing, right? So, you know, are they in the bank, are they in the financial services world, and do they have, you know, key and critical servers that have amassed all types of data on it? If so, well, that's where I'd start. If I were to put some, you know, shine a spotlight somewhere, it'd be on that server and say, let's watch that. Right. And then zoom out from there. Right. So then let's look at all sort of points of compromise or things that could be compromised. Right. So that's all entrance and exit points of the network, all of the devices, especially devices that are now flowing, out of the office and to the Starbucks, then to the house. Then the kid jumped on it and did his Zoom class on it. And then, you know, and, right? This shared responsibility, the shared usage now of technology in the home, you know, has opened up all types of new, you know, things. So when you say, you know, what to monitor, how much to monitor, I think it's any and all devices that potentially could engage some sort of sensitive material. I think that's where you start.
Okay. So something I did with this particular client is when I did the assessment, it tells us what information was found. So it says, you know, hey, there were 3 MasterCard numbers, you know, accessible on your network, 33 mm-hmm. Social Security numbers, you know, mm-hmm. 3 Visa cards. So that's the first thing, like you said, is identify and understand what your client has that could be valuable. Because mm-hmm. even though it doesn't sound like a lot, their server gets hacked, those Social Security numbers get out, there's 33 potential issues with that's people right. having identity theft.
Yeah, immediately. And those are the ones where you have to go out and you have to notify them that their information was compromised. And then depending on state and depending on how many records, you may have to notify publicly in different ways too. Which is interesting because when you do that sort of a scan, even if they're a business that would have, you know, thousands of records, when you do that sort of a scan, you should find 0. So when you find 33, was that all that they had, or was that all that they had that wasn't encrypted or wasn't stored in the proper space?
So this was all that was unencrypted, open on a server share, and this was just, you know, one machine checked
right
out right. of a network of I don't remember how many stations they have. But there we go. That's just the one server. So we haven't even looked at the other machines. We haven't looked at what comes in and out of their network, like you said, wireless devices. They do have a wireless network. Now, we did segment that when we set it up. So as long as they're not giving guests
sure.
the private side of the password.
Right. I mean, that's I'll put that into the general sort of mm-hmm. security world. So we didn't even have to talk about that. But if you found it on one machine, you found these 33, and likely they weren't being stored where the rest of them would be, you would think, right? So that right. so maybe, you know, here's what happens. You know, you come in again, Marvin B, computer genius, comes into the facility, sets up all these rules, gets them going, says, hey, you know, we need you to use this encrypted file system, and that's where the sensitive stuff's going to be. That's where the important financial stuff is going to be, and it works great. And they start using it for like a month or two, and then all of a sudden, you know, either COVID happens and everyone had to go home, or just real world happens, and I'm moving around, and hey, I just need to screenshot that, or I'm going to copy paste this into an email or copy paste it over to another drive. And now it's living on 4 other machines outside of that safe space that you've created for it.
Right.
Because it was easier in the moment, or easier maybe productivity wise, to access it from, you know, the laptop over there, the admin needs to send out, this is a real story. Admin wanted to send out Christmas cards. We all do this, right?
Yeah.
We all do this. Admin's going to send out the Christmas cards. Send me the file with the customer stuff with the Christmas card. So they send the file. She starts doing it, whatever. We found the file, you know, later on. Ultimately, the file that had the addresses on it also had all types of financial information and sort of notes and everything else about each of their top 100 clients in this Excel file. But it was easy because she needed the addresses. So, you know, they sent the file anyway, and they sent it out of the secure system just onto a desktop. Hmm. So now it wasn't breached. It was found during the discovery process, though, so not an issue. But had that computer gotten malware on it or something like that, all of their top customers, well, you know, 100 customers on that Christmas card list, all their stuff would have been out to the world.
So
it happens that easy.
Yeah. So you mentioned that this was found during discovery process. Now, was this a normal and ongoing scan that just happens on a regular basis and this was exposed, or was there something that prompted this discovery process?
Yeah, in that example, I don't know what triggered us to, okay. you know, to be involved, you know, but in general, we're either coming in because we're coming a lot of the times because either they were exposed in one way or another, and now they're trying to figure out what happened and what the depth of it was. And we do offer a monitoring solution that will tell you lots of things about everything that's connected to your network and what's talking to what and what types of files are going where. So we have this sort of capability of awareness. So after the fact, sometimes we're brought in, you know, to sort of launch that and then try to go back in time where we can to figure out what may have happened or how something may have happened by understanding what the, you know, what doors are open and things like that. You know, We have that capability, but the other side of it hopefully would be a business that's just looking to better itself, right? And, that's the better way to go in, where there hasn't been an issue, where there hasn't been a, you know, something to prompt it, and they're just trying to do the right things, and we just deploy out in the network and start snooping around.
So now let me ask the million-dollar question: are there solutions, and whether they're Sox Odor or somebody else, that would throw up a red flag when that admin sent that file to somebody's desktop? Because that's the type of monitoring that I'm thinking needs to be done, is we need to be able to have something that says, this is not normal. This is outside of what our, you know, standard protection protocol is. So how do we do that?
There's tons of systems that in theory would catch that, including ours, right? So we monitor in different areas. We're monitoring on the network side. You know, so if there was an indicator on that file or on that folder that says maybe it shouldn't be accessed and it's accessed, that could alert to us. If there's an indicator that says that file shouldn't be in motion and it is, you know, shouldn't ever appear outside of this store, and now it's transferred from one to another, that's something where we in theory could monitor as well. We do the same thing in the cloud, right? So with the cloud, using everyone's on 365, right? So those files too, there could be indicators that would let us know that there's PII or PHI or things in the file that's transferred, that we would then alert and say, hey, this isn't, you know, this is potentially an issue for you. And then even an email, this isn't an area that we participate, but even an email, you should have systems in place that will look for identifiers, look for triggers. And if something is emailed from one to another, you know, to at least check, is it encrypted or is it not? Maybe it auto encrypts or else it doesn't send. And all those things can be done. And like I said, all those things can be done fairly affordably these days.
All right. So we're going to get into something a little bit. I have two questions, but let me start with hopefully the easy question in terms of cybersecurity for SMBs. When you were talking about being able to monitor, you know, files in motion. So most of the time we think about malware, ransomware, that sort of endpoint protection. But then you mentioned 365 and cloud monitoring. So what other types of monitoring are done with those systems?
Yeah, so we monitor, as an organization, we're monitoring everything from the traditional network, you know, five devices all in the same office, all going through the same firewall. We monitor that environment pretty closely. And when we're doing it, we're looking at not only at the what I'll call known assets, that would be the desktops, the servers, the firewall, those known assets, but then also any unknown assets. What do I mean? You have a cool conference room video camera system with mics and multiple cameras, and it spins around the room 10 times or whatever it does. You know, we're monitoring that on your network too, because that's typically networked in as well, so that you can do Zoom and other things. We're monitoring the printers, the phones, the you know, the Nest thermostat, you know, anything that's on the network, you know, assigned an IP address on the network, is something that we would monitor from a network perspective. We're typically looking for bad behavior or weird behavior, right? So malicious activity or anomalous behavior are things that we're constantly trying to key in on the network. We do take that then into the cloud. The importance in the cloud today is in a lot of ways identity related, right? So Marvin just logged in beautiful sunny Florida, but he's also logged in Paris, France. Which Marvin is Marvin? We're not talking about the other guy that's in
Miami,
that's south of Miami. But you know, which Marvin is Marvin really at that point, right? So being able to detect, you know, hey, we've got this weird login from a strange place, and then alert, you know, to those that alert down to the tech team and say, hey, you need to look into this. I think is important. So we do that in the cloud. We're also monitoring a ton of different cloud security solutions, you know, known vendors like Sophos and Cisco and others out there that have really great technology and really aware systems that are typically pumping out lots and lots of indicators and lots of alerts. We're parsing through all of that data, looking for the, you know, the true issues, separating out false positives and stuff like that. And then all the way then down to the endpoint, you know, so network, cloud, and then down to the endpoint itself, which has been interesting this year. We've seen office environments go from an 80% on-prem, 20% off-premise standpoint to 10% or less still in the office, and everyone else running around like crazy for the past year.
Right.
You know, people working not only working from home, but working from anywhere, right? So, you know, hey, we picked up stakes and moved to Montana. It's that type of stuff, right? In the past year, we've seen quite a bit of, right? So making sure that we're have a window into those devices, those laptops, making sure that if they're compromised in any way, if there's bad activity in any way happening on those devices, that we're also alerting back to the tech team and letting them, you know, and participating in the remediation process.
All right. So part one of this question is, how are you monitoring inside the network? So the on-prem, mm-hmm. in terms of, are you using an agent, a software-based agent, some hardware, appliances? Mm-hmm. And then with all of this work from home that we've had to do in the last year, how has your model transitioned to that?
Good question. I think, you know, I think this year it will bring about and has brought about a good amount of innovation, right? So your question, you're spot on in sort of how you frame the question. The way that we traditionally were monitoring, you know, whether it's a bank, whether it's state and local government, whether it's a law firm, the way that we traditionally would monitor would be first to start with the network, and we would push a device out on the network that's purpose-built, that is doing a few different tasks at any given time, and is, we can, you know, it's really powerful, and we can look at control the health. We can make sure that everything is, you know, tip-top with it. So it makes sense for us to push out that way on the network. Well, everyone went home. Everyone went home, and not only did they go home, which we as an organization were prepared for with an endpoint component that we could push out via agent to any device, but they went home, but they also went to the cloud 100%, right? Like a lot of businesses that were on they would use 365, I think, pretty universally, but you know, other systems, maybe they just hadn't really sort of figured it out, and I think very quickly they started adopting, you know, a lot of collaborative tools, whether, you know,
a lot of SharePoint, Ignite servers, Azure.
The SharePoint side and the Azure side, we've always been sort of involved with, but like, if you zoom back out to like that desktop and that business owner, you know, tools like Zoom. What Zoom became a, you know, an action word this year, right? You know, tools like Zoom, which we all sort of were using a little bit, became standard. Teams. So many businesses, you know, again, in the tech world, maybe we were using Teams pretty actively. Now, the that business customer, that architect, that whomever is either using Teams or they're heavily reliant on Slack and other productivity tools, right? So all these different cloud productivity, business productivity tools, really have jumped into the spotlight in the past year, and making sure that those systems are set up with multi-factor authentication, making sure that those systems are, blocking out bad actors, and making sure that if those systems are producing an alert saying that, hey, someone tried to log in, at this time, that someone's actually mining the store and looking at it. So that cloud piece was the real innovation piece, I think, for us. And we did that very quickly. We started looking at it quite aggressively in March of last year, and by June, mid to late June, we were already actively then working with, over a dozen brands in the cloud. So we worked quickly to make sure that we had that coverage.
All right. So was this your managed cloud SIEM?
That's right.
All right. Explain that a little bit more, because you said you guys are working on it last year. And if I remember my research, it shows that they kind of announced it in January. like all of a sudden in January.
No, managed cloud SIEM was announced, was announced and really brought out, I think, in June or July of last year. We had some endpoint. We've had some other stuff that we were doing before that, but
I see what they did. So you had that, but it said that you added CISA IOCs. So the indicators of compromise.
That was this year.
Okay,
that was this year with the breaches. We added the indicators of compromise. From CISA. Yeah, okay. that was this year.
All right, let's go back to the MCS and kind of describe what that is. So that's the cloud.
I'm going to go back through your notes, Marvin B.
I got like tons of notes here. I'm sitting here thinking.
and don't expect me to know the dates and the times of anything.
That's why I'm sitting there. I'm going through this. I'm like, wait a minute, MCS was, and then I'm trying to understand all the acronyms. You guys have just as many acronyms as everybody else.
We do. So there were some 365 issues earlier this year, which we included there were some produced published indicators of compromise, and we worked quickly to make sure that our framework would look for those indicators and help protect users from those issues. But that was this year. Cloud SIEM came out last year. Just to explain it, the cloud SIEM was really born out of necessity. So we saw users gravitating towards everything from the 365 stack to Google Workplace to Azure to AWS, and then we saw a real need to monitor down to the endpoint using tools like Sophos, SentinelOne, CrowdStrike, Cylance, and others. Right. So we were able to tap into the alert feed from these different systems via API. So an API basically gives us access, or gives us a window into that feed of information. We then are able to audit it in real time and then work through and produce the high level alert so that the end customer team can then take the appropriate action. So, we started doing that middle of last year, really built it out over the summer, and now are incredibly strong in a number of different cloud services, including the ones that I mentioned.
Okay. So from an MSP perspective, because most of the time we're monitoring the company network, and as everybody went and started working from home, I know that some of my customers allowed for us to put our protection, our management tools on either a notebook or a PC that they sent home with the customer.
Sure.
Or mm-hmm. they told their employees that, you know, we need to put the same tools at the office on your personal home computer.
Mm-hmm.
So when you talk about being able to transition the monitoring from the on-prem to the work from home, is your technology able to monitor the home devices as well? Is it something that can get pushed to that, yeah. or are you just monitoring the traffic coming in and where it's coming from?
Both, right? So you want to do both, right? So you want to monitor the traffic, whether that traffic is on network via VPN, whether that traffic or activity is in the cloud solutions like we've talked about, or the third leg of that, which would be the endpoint, right? The endpoint being the laptop, the desktop that you brought home, the desktop that you're blowing the dust off at home that you're now going to repurpose for business work, whatever it might be. Those endpoint devices are critical. If you don't, once you move away from a centralized network, protecting those individual endpoints becomes critical. So the way that that's accomplished, I think probably the way that you did it as well, is we need to load this software. We need to put this agent on this device so that we can have better visibility over the devices themselves.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So now, who are we at? 51 minutes. All right. We're not going to touch everything we wanted to touch on, but I don't want to get too much into pricing, because if people want that information, they can contact you. So first thing I want to do is, we did not talk about a landing page. Where do we want to send people if they have more questions about SOC Solder?
Yeah, well, definitely come to socksolder.com, socksoter.com. You can email us at sales or info@socksolder.com, either one. And that'll get to my team and get to us. I'm Eric at SockSolder, if you want to, or ePinto at SockSolder, I believe.
All right. You're going to get slammed.
I hope not. But we're incredibly accessible. We work with small businesses all the time. And small to mid-sized managed service providers all the time. That's really our sweet spot.
Okay. So now in terms of what SOC Solder mm-hmm. does. So you've got the monitoring mm-hmm. with, it sounds like, active remediation. Is that fair to yeah. say that?
Good question.
There so is that active handshake, remediation, or is there just monitoring our, and our alerting that and yours, if you guys find something, really you're going to let us know?
Things. A, your we need to get to work. Right? So you may say, hey, you know, we've got it handled. We've got a 24/7 knock. And as soon as you give us the alert, we're going to use our RMM and other tools to engage. And we've got it from there. Right. And that's where they want the baton transfer to be, at point of alert. We can do that. Other organizations say, hey, you know what? I really have a nice lifestyle. I go out on my boat all weekend, and okay. I really don't want to be bothered. Can you handle? You know, can you do more? And we absolutely do. So we'll get down to the firewall. We'll get down to the individual endpoint if we need to, and shut it down, isolate it, and that way it can be further triaged and handled on Monday. Yeah, we've got package for organizations with
I think, what did you say? 250 and below is probably
of employees. It really comes down to how many people are in, you know, are on the network or in each location. But our sweet spot has been traditionally in the sub 500, sub 250 space, employee space. We do.
Okay.
Yeah, we get down to five users.
Now, I saw on your website that you actually have a SOHO package. We haven't even talked about
compliance, man. But the reason why is compliance is not caring.
Okay.
Right? When you look at compliance rules like CMMC, which is the and I'll screw this up, but DoD compliance, cybersecurity maturity model certification. When you get into that, the requirements are for businesses small and large to get in line with an effective mm-hmm. level of monitoring and awareness and incident response capabilities. And you could tell them that you're only 15 employees and they're going to say, okay, great. But if you want to continue getting, you know, working with us and making widgets for us and getting, you know, and in business with us doing these things, you have to, you know, you need to comply. So we've got Soho package just designed for that 10-15 user space. We've got packages that are designed for 20 users, 30 users, 50 users. All of that's pretty easy for us. We try to scale it pretty well, even down to 5 users if need be. And we've got a strategy around that too.
We didn't talk about that because I did have that questions. On my notes, and Marvin, I actually printed out a whole section on the NIST 800-171.
We're going to after hours mode, right?
Well, because here's the thing, because Saved by the Bell. Because that was a whole thing that caught my attention. I'm like, I know that the CMMC kind of grew out of like the Department of Defense, and now it's trickling down to, our clients that are going to have to follow this. And they're going to look at us and go, what? We do not need Department of Defense NIST security.
Everything from this cybersecurity framework to NIST,
but a lot of it's based on the NIST, which NIST we do use NIST, a lot of us.
Particularly, yes, this was born from NIST 800-171, which was DOD and DFARS compliance requirements. The difference being now, not only do you have to monitor, not only do you have to assess, not only do you have to have a game plan to better yourselves from a security perspective, but they're introducing the idea of audit, right? The idea that there's going to be a review process and an audit process, where you'll have a team come in and help you to review your organization and help you to, understand where you're deficient and write policies, create policies, and get all those things in place. And then once you're ready, you kind of raise your hand and say, I'm ready. And then now, likely next year, you'll start with active audits, of small groups with 25, 30, 40 employees and less, where they have to, submit themselves to audit. So it's really interesting. If you're a business if you've heard CMMC and sort of ignored it, I would challenge you to not do so. It's not in your sort of best interest to do so. We've had tons of clients that have come through now and partners that have come through now and said, hey, our customer is being refused access to a contract. And they're not actually even being refused access to the contract necessarily by the government, but by the contractor that they were working with. They're producing one little piece of a larger thing, right? So that larger company is the one that has maybe the direct contract, but they're producing their part of the puzzle, their little piece, right. And those larger guys are now saying, hey, they're starting to really scrutinize the people that they are doing business with so they have a comfort level that those businesses are going to have the right things deployed. They're going to have the awareness of the network. They're going to have a capability for a response. And if they don't, then they'll find another widget maker that does. So you can't really ignore this anymore. I'm not saying you need to spend millions of dollars, figuring it out.
Absolutely.
Tomorrow. And I'm saying you there's a lot of free guidance, a lot of information that you could at least start to arm yourself and prepare yourself. You can reach out, you can call my team. We deal with this every day. We have, we've got people on staff that have been trained and to review this stuff with you. And those are the first steps that I would advise every business to start taking right now.
Well, I can tell you, it is this past year has opened the eyes of some of my clients. I don't know if I need to remind you. So most of my clients are law firms, and a big portion of them are insurance defense firms. So the insurance companies are now sending them these security assessments and guidelines, and it used to be that they would just fill them out. Yes, yes, yes. We're protected. Yes, we have backup, and send it on. And I got to look at one early last year.
Right.
And I had to say, time out. You can't sign this and send it.
You were upfront
because we're not doing this.
That's the tricky spot that I think a lot of
we need to do this.
Finding themselves in where it's not even that. and partly the fact that you have to say time out, we're not doing this. But then if the customers on the other side thought you were, so now you've got a disc, you know, in a lot of these cases where, you know, you've been selling them your, hey, well, this, you know, and I'm not saying you, I'm not saying Marvin B, either one of them, but the service providers out there saying, hey, you know, I'm going to put you on my gold plan, and it's got this and that. And
no, whatever I got it, but I mean,
and then that, you know, you start asking a few scrutinous questions and realize that it doesn't have these things in it. So what is that, the platinum plan or the diamond, or which one is that?
Well, that's the problem, because I think even a lot of MSPs, and I'll be honest, there are some questions that none of our plans covered. And so I had to tell them, this is all above and beyond what we have is set in place. And, you know, the reason mm-hmm. I had to say time out mm-hmm. was because mm-hmm. they started putting in that clause that we're going to, you know, reserve the right to audit at any time. And I said, okay, well, if they're going to do that, then we need to make sure we're doing this, because I'm not getting my business fined, you know, because of this. And it was more the fact of, let me say, so
all day long.
Let's just hypothetically say a client said, well, let's just say we're doing it and see what happens.
Take a look, read more closely. And don't be afraid to say, hey, time out, because if you go along with it and then it hits the fan and now it's all called into question, they're going to remember that you greenlit, that you said, yeah, we were good, or that you didn't interject and say, hey, we do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And yep. No, because that may be the answer too. We do it, but maybe not to the depth of what this is asking for. So let's evaluate right. ways that we can get there. And quite frankly, there are tools to get there. What you're experiencing is the leveling up that's going to happen across the board for every industry. Like I said earlier, if you're in the business of engaging with, maintaining, transacting in that sense, in any of these sensitive material areas, there's going to be a leveling up over the next year to 2 years and 3 years. Guaranteed.
Oh, yeah. Now I can. Oh, yeah. Because in the law firm industry, so in the insurance industry, they're not mm-hmm. giving cases to law firms that aren't doing these steps. So if a law firm that's been getting, you know, 50 to 100 yep. cases a year, you know, from Allstate or State Farm yep. and State Farm says, oh, you're not compliant, well, you don't get those cases anymore. Then the attorney's like, oh, I need those cases. What do we need to do? And it is going to trickle down, like yeah. my other no, client, it's the, becoming standard, you know, they're the, an engineering
the model
firm.
That's behind it for your,
you know, they can't get insurance unless the insurance they is, fill out these forms now.
There's an insurance model called NAIC, which requires the insurers to do certain things that also affects the businesses that they're doing business with. Or anyone that might have their insurance records, their customer insurance records. So the national vendors, if your lawyers are doing business directly with the State Farms and yep. whomever else,
third party vendors,
because so many states in the U.S. have adopted this model in the past couple of years, the national vendors have to just make it a national rule that these things are in place, because they're not going to cherry pick and say, oh, well, you're in South Carolina, therefore you have to do it this way, but oh, you're in Florida, so it's different, right. Which is true. South Carolina has a different insurance model than Florida. I'm not going to pick on you guys today. I mean, hey, I'm in Texas, man.
Everybody has a different thing than Florida. Come on.
the Florida man stories could be Texas man stories just as easily sometimes. we get out there.
That's true. That's fair. Yeah, okay. Well, we'll do this next time. But hey, before we go, I have one question to ask you, because it wasn't going to be a story, but there was a news report, was this yesterday, mm-hmm. that Microsoft
uh-huh.
is working on a new store for Windows 10 that is rumored to be a cloud PC service. So they are now going to be
running
PCs in the cloud.
They moved everybody to email as a service. Email as a service and file sharing as a service. And
that's really desktop as a service.
If you really think about it, the idea of, remember, I wish I had one here. Yeah. Remember the action pack, and you'd go in with it and you'd be like, and have all the CDs in it. remember those days? And maybe they still have them, but I remember I used to have my big notebook with all these CDs in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had one that was like a maroon and black, but yeah, and it said, partner or whatever program on it.
It was
awesome.
Blue,
it
black notebook and
exchange and whatever else you want. They moved away from that stuff so quick for all businesses and just said, no, just figure out, pay us $5 a month
every
for
server employee, version, let's call it a day,
or $10 a month or whatever that number is. And everyone over the past few years has just said, you know what? You're right. It's easier that way. So we just factor it in. We factor it in now. So if you have 10 employees, you're going to give $60, to Microsoft if you're on that plan, or $80 or whatever it's going to be a month, right? So if they were able to get end customer businesses over to that model in the past 5 years, plus minus, then the idea of, well, why don't we just have your whole desktop? It seems like a natural move to me. Right.
Of course. That's where they're moving. As soon as they can get rid of the volume license and the one-off purchases.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That's exactly what they're going to do. And then it's going to be like, the OS is, you're leasing it anyway. People think that they buy it when they get the computer. No, it's a lease anyway.
Also goes up against
why not just have it all cloud enabled, cloud
router,
direct with Microsoft.
The device becomes irrelevant. Which, if you look at it that way,
right,
it seems like it'd be a lot easier, wouldn't it? Because that way, you spill a Coke on your computer, you're like, I'll have another one tomorrow. And when I do get it tomorrow, as soon as I boot it up, it feels just like it did yesterday. Without even thinking about it, the difference for you is that I never had to call Marvin, though.
Of course. Right. Well, are in the cloud.
I think that
the data is going to be in the cloud.
Your role then will shift too, and I think it'll shift to do more of like what we're doing now, right? So, being the watchful eye, being the referee, being the coach, all of those things, and not necessarily worried about the hardware.
Yep.
Itself, it's sort of inconsequential, but still setting it up, making sure that they've got productivity where it needs to be, make sure that you're monitoring and aware and have the security solutions in place. That's the role that I think you and your peers will find yourself in the next 10 years for sure.
I'll be looking for another recurring revenue model.
Changing a bit.
So I want to depend on.
Okay.
Yeah, it will. All right, my friend. Let's do this. Let's go ahead and end off the show portion here, and we'll come right back and get more into this during the post show. Ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to Eric Pinto from Sock Solder. Here on this episode of Podnuts Pro, we are going to have him back at some point in time because we're going to go over all those things that we didn't get to with CMMC.
They can find NIST, it's on the website.
Some of these other questions that we have about the packages you guys have rolled out, we didn't even get into all your stuff. So that is going to do it for this episode, folks. Be sure to come back again. We are here most Wednesdays at 8 p.m. on YouTube and the Facebook. Head over to podnutspro.com and check out past episodes there. Also, while you're there, you might want to hit on the little store icon, click on some of the Amazon links. That'll help support the show. If you like us, purchase some things at Amazon. No difference in price to you, but I'll get a little bit of commission that will help pay for things like StreamYard and posting and hosting the web services and stuff like that. And let's see here. I was looking at something on the time. We are good. So on behalf of my friend Eric Pinto, that is going to do it. And those of you that are watching, stay with us through the video. We will come back for the post show. And next week, we'll have another great show. And until then, holla.